On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Gentlemen, please welcome the 25th captain in franchise history. From Oakville, Ontario, number 91, John Tavares.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back into an all-new edition of the Tall Can Audio Podcast. As always, my name is Matt Robinson, here with you in our studios in beautiful Bytown, Canada. Joined today by a very special guest. You know him from, if you Ottawa people, if you've been around long enough, you know him from the original OSR, you know him from the Team 1200, more recently NHL Network Radio, certainly AMI, and of course, the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs in-house. Mike Ross is here. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Matt.
It's quite a resume you got there. What have you been keeping busy since the Toronto bubble wrapped up?
All right. Well, before we make it about me, I got to ask you how you came up with the Tall Can title, because I love tall cans.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be drinking anything, it better be in a tall can.
Exactly. So it comes a little bit of that. One of the things that we do on here, certainly you're kind of getting screwed here, little Mike, if I'm being honest with you. We like to have guests in studio and we will try a different craft beer while we talk about whatever we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
But COVID has obviously put a stop to that for now. So we haven't been able to do that. But we also kind of like the idea that maybe you get from our show a little bit more like you do in a tall can, right? And of course,
there you go.
I learned in broadcast school, one of the very first pairs of broadcast headphones way back in the early part of the century was they were so big that they were also called tall cans unofficially.
Gotcha.
So kind of all tied together in that way and just something that I enjoyed. So
right on. I love it. I'll tell you, in these COVID times, you know, everything sort of screeched to a halt for us back in March. And so there was no hockey to be had until late July for me when I got hired by the NHL to work the Toronto playoff games. So I got a real good taste of summer hockey, which was a real blast for me. And now, you know, I've got, you mentioned AMI. AMI is Accessible Media Inc. It's a broadcasting company I've been with now for almost 5 years. And we produce and put together daily programming of both the audio and video mediums for a blind audience, for blind Canadians. And everything we do, we try and do through the lens of accessibility. So we do a lot of stories on accessibility issues and a lot about technology, because when it comes to accessibility, technology changing every day and affecting accessibility on a daily basis. So we do a lot of stories on technology, and certainly we talk sports, we talk entertainment, we do news. I do a news show for AMI, so that's kept me busy. I've been very thankful to be working through that. And now there's another hockey dry spell. The off season comes late for us, if you will, and just sort of sitting around right now and waiting to, just like everybody else, to hear as to when we might start things up with a training camp and resuming the next season, if you will.
I just saw something put out by AMI. One of my closest friends, a woman named Amy Burke, she's a multiple-time Paralympian in training for Tokyo, I guess 2021 now we're calling it, and AMI just released the latest episode of a program that they're calling Level Playing Field. And yep. Listeners to this show will know Amy. She's been on as a guest and a co-host several times, and so we have a good relationship with her. They just put out an episode, and I'll share the link in all our social media places if you want to check out Amy's episode, but about her career and her journey towards it. Really enjoyed it. I thought you guys did a great job putting that together, too. So some really cool stuff coming out of AMI.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, AMI started many, many years ago under a different name. It was called Voiceprint, and it was all about reading newspaper and magazine articles for a blind audience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the years, they really have evolved the programming into a few years ago, it was more sort of long-form programming, documentary programming. And when I started in 2016, well, late 2015, early 2016, it had been decided let's get into live broadcasting. Let's do some live shows.
Right.
And so I was part of the first live show there. And it wasn't long before, I mean, they'd always covered para sports, but we really sort of jumped into it and started broadcasting the Canadian Blind Hockey Championship, the Canadian Blind Curling Championship. Last year I was in BC. I was covering the Canadian Blind Golf Championship.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's just so much going on in the blind sports community and in other para sports that now we have the Neutral Zone, which is a weekly para sport show that airs on AMI Audio.
Right.
And, of course, shows like you just mentioned, Level Playing Field, for example, just one of many that has really done a great job showcasing our para athletes, you know, not only in their preparations for the Paralympics and the Parapan Am Games, but also outside of those years. Mm-hmm. You know, CBC, TSN, they always do a great job at profiling athletes the year of the event.
Right.
But it's important to us to make sure that we are putting that spotlight on those athletes outside of those training years as well.
Yeah, well, and we like to get Amy on just after she's competed because beforehand she won't have any beers with us. But in the week or two, right after a major competition, she might crack one open with us and whatever. So for listeners who know Amy from this show, just head up YouTube and search Level Playing Field Amy Burke. You'll find it. And while you're there, you'll be able to click on the Accessible Media YouTube channel, see what else they're up to. But we'll share all the links, as I mentioned. So
awesome. I appreciate that.
Why don't we talk a little bit? I'd like to work through your career a little bit because we're based here in Ottawa, and I'm
yep.
pretty sure that's where you're from, is it not? And certainly where you got your start.
That is my hometown, born and raised in Ottawa. Grew up most of my life right down in the Lower Town neighborhood, just a couple blocks over from the home now for many years now of. Well, now it's TSN 1200. When
right.
I was there, it was the Team 1200. It was OSR 1200 before that, back in the old days of being on Carling Avenue. Mm. But yeah, I'm an Ottawa guy. I mean, I got my start in broadcasting and in sports announcing in Ottawa. And so, yeah, my family's all still there. My wife's family's from there as well. So, yeah, still tons of ties to Ottawa.
Oh, great. So maybe once this pandemic's over, when you come back to visit, we can get you in studio and pay off that beer we owe you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I'll take you up on that.
Perfect. How do you end up getting hired? We've had several guys, a couple day one guys from OSR 1200 or the Team 1200 in studio before. How do you get started with them?
I was working, I actually started with CFGO when it was Energy 1200.
Oh, yeah.
And I was working, well, okay, even let's rewind just a couple of years before that. So I'm at Carleton University. I'm studying psychology. I want to become a teacher. And at some point in my first year, I become aware that there is a radio station on campus called CKCU.
Right.
And
still running.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Canada's biggest campus community radio station. And I always sort of had an interest in radio. I'd always loved radio. Had never thought of it as a potential career. Never thought, oh, that's how I'm going to make my living. And it's really, it's odd. I don't know why. I don't know why I didn't think of it as a career. I mean, I knew people that worked in radio. I knew, you know, that you could do it as a job. It never crossed my mind as something that I was going to do. Like, I always thought, well, you want to do that, you go to broadcasting school, you go to radio school, and I wasn't doing that. So the whole CKCU thing seemed like kind of a neat opportunity to maybe dabble in radio,
right,
and sort of scratch that itch without having to make, you know, a whole bunch of changes. So I walked in there, asked them, well, really told them, I want to be here. I want to do something. And they said, okay, what do you do? What do you like? And I said, well, I like sports. And they said, great. We got a sports show on Mondays. Show up. So I did. And, you know, I was immediately helping with the production of the show, co-hosting the show. And within probably 6 months, everybody basically involved with that show either quit or graduated. And it was my baby for the next, 3.5, 4 years.
Wow.
And I worked with some fantastic people who, you know, I mean, Ian Mendez was part of our show. Matt Charbonneau, who went on to work in media relations for the Montreal Expos, among other things. He was on the show with me. So we had some cool names of sort of future broadcasters and PR people, but
right,
there are other people who came before us, you know, big names in Canadian media that had been in the halls of CKCU. So we were in good company. And so we did a show on Monday called Breakaway. It was on at noon. It was 1 hour a week. But that gave me an opportunity to cover sports events. Like, you know, this was a time where they gave you a press pass and I could go, and I was covering the NHL. I was covering the CFL,
wow,
junior hockey.
Yeah.
Then we got AAA baseball with the Lynx, and I started covering that. And that was sort of my, you know, entry into sort of the professional world of sports. And at the same time at Carleton, I was doing some volunteer work for the athletic department, helping out with different game day events. And one day they said, hey, our football team needs an announcer. You do a sports show over at CKCU, don't you? And I said, yeah. Well, you want to be our announcer? And I'm, you know, again, I never gave any thought to being an announcer. I knew the big voices that I heard when I went to games, and I had guys that I sort of looked up to. But I never thought of doing it myself. But suddenly, here was another opportunity.
Right.
So we jumped at it. So that's how I got into sports announcing. I was doing it for the Carleton University Ravens football team. And how I got into radio was with CKCU originally, and then got hired at Energy 1200 as an overnight operator. Did that for a couple of years, worked in promotions and stuff like that. And then I got hired there as an on-air announcer, and did that for about a year. And then in 98, they flipped the format.
Right.
And they went all sports. And thankfully, I knew enough about sports and I was able to convince the incoming program director to give me a job, don't fire me. I just got engaged. I need this job.
Right.
And so they made me the producer and basically sort of third wheel on the morning show with OSR 1200. So in the span of, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years, you know, I was getting my first taste of radio, my first taste of sports announcing, and suddenly now I'm working in it professionally. I'm a, you know, full-time job working in radio in Ottawa, and it wasn't long after that that the opportunity to announce for the Ottawa 67s came up.
So that would be what year roughly, the 67s gig?
1998.
Okay, so right there, all came at once.
Yeah, like it was all there, and the thing with the 67 ski, I didn't get it originally. James Cebulski got it.
Oh wow, yeah.
And a few months into that, James was hired, and I believe it was the Score that hired him, and it was either, I don't remember if it was Toronto or if it was Vancouver that he went to first. But that meant that the 67s gig had opened up, and so they called me up and said, you know, would you like to come out and audition? I said, sure. Didn't get the job, and when James left, they automatically called me and said, hey, you know,
you're in.
Really good. We'd like to bring you in. We need somebody now. And probably within a month, they announced, the Canadian Hockey League announced that we were going to be hosting the Memorial Cup that season. So what a first year, right?
Yeah, like seriously.
You jump in, you're covering, you know, professional sports. I'm doing it on a morning show. And at the same time, every Friday and Sunday afternoon, I'm going down and announcing for the 67s and getting ready to do a Memorial Cup and win a Memorial Cup in that first season. So it was...
That's the Calgary Hitmen, isn't it? End up losing that. They're playing in it. Who ended
7-6.
Yeah.
7-6 and over in OT.
Right. That was... Yeah. I remember that, actually. I'm just having a hard time remembering who they lost to. So.
Yeah,
Was it Ottawa? Did Ottawa
it
win?
Was.
It? Yeah?
Yeah, we won... it was Ottawa, Calgary... Acadie, Bathurst, and Belleville were the four teams, and Belleville was really our big nemesis at the time in the OHL. They had bounced us in the playoffs for the OHL, and we ended up having to sit around for a month waiting for the tournament to start. So, but I mean, I think back to some of the names that were involved in that tournament. I mean, Roberto Luongo was the goalie for Acadie Bathurst. Mm. Pavel Brendel, there's a name
wow.
not a lot of people are going to remember, but he was supposed to be something huge. Yeah. He ended up with New York Rangers for a little bit. But yeah, we ended up beating Calgary in double OT. Vince Millette jumping off the boards and sticking the landing, by the way, on the ice in the celebration, which was outstanding. Just some great memories of winning that Memorial Cup. I mean that was my first season as a full-time announcer with hockey, and what a great way to cap it off.
Yeah, no kidding. So while you're doing that, OSR turns into the Team 1200, and you run that for a while. What eventually pulls you out of Ottawa?
An opportunity. I mean, everybody, you know, I don't know so much about now, but back then, you know, you're talking 20 years ago. The big draw, if you were in broadcasting, was wanting to be in Toronto. Was the center of the media, a universe in the country. That's where everybody sort of aspired to be.
Right.
And especially in radio. You know, it really was the big smoke when it came to radio.
Yeah, that's how you've made it in Canadian radios, when you get to
exactly.
Toronto.
Exactly. And yeah. I mean nowadays you can certainly say, you know, oh well, you get great opportunities in Montreal, opportunities in Vancouver, opportunities, maybe you might even look at Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of markets that have become what you would call a medium sized market now are very attractive.
Right.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there just aren't as many jobs as there used to be in radio, because of the multiple ownership rules that changed right about that time. Mm-hmm. in the late 90s. But you know, in 1999, 2000, thereabouts into 2001, Toronto was still the place you wanted to be if you were in broadcasting. And Chum had announced that they were going to be launching a national sports network. And they, to their credit, they hired a lot of people from, they hired a lot of people away from pretty big jobs.
Right.
But they also gave opportunities to some of their people in-house. And sports radio, you have to remember, at the time, in Canada, there were only two sports radio stations. in 2000, 2001,
so it'd be the fan
there was
in Toronto.
The fan in Toronto,
yep.
And there was the team in Ottawa.
Right.
That's it.
Wow.
So they didn't have a huge amount of experienced producers, and that's what I was brought in on, was the fact that I was going to be producing the afternoon drive show. Now, the fact that I could, you know, jump in the host chair, the co-host
sure, yeah.
chair, the fact that I was a reporter in Ottawa, that I did the locker room stuff for Senators broadcasts, that all played a part. But they needed good, strong producing from the beginning, and that was my in. And so in 2001, I made my way down to Toronto. And the tough part about that was leaving, you know, the 67s, because it was another championship year. Won the OHL championship that season. So, you know, I'd been there for three seasons, and we picked up two championships, right?
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And they weren't, you know, they had the Memorial Cup berth that year. They had another one just a couple of years later. It was a really good stretch for them.
Yeah.
But for me, the opportunity to be on the big stage in radio was just too hard to pass up.
So this is the infamous start of the team in Toronto. We had Paul Romanuk on not too long ago, and he doesn't have very many nice things to say about the way that all ended.
Oh, no, I know. did he talk about the last, like the actual meeting where we all got fired?
I don't believe it came up on the...
Because Romy gave the highlight speech of that meeting.
He was going down swinging.
Yeah, I won't rehash the whole thing, but basically Paul Romanuk said to ownership... of Chum at that time, what was on the minds of a lot of people. And let's face it, I mean, at the time, you know, there was a lot of young guys and young women who were still sort of starting out. Some of us were starting, you know, our adult lives, right?
Like, well, like you just said, gave up a gig to come down here and do this, and you're folding up the tent.
Yeah, and I mean, I just bought a house
right
2 weeks before that. You had other people who were getting married, having their first kids. But we also, we just didn't have the gravitas to say some of the things that that Paul said for us.
Yeah.
And for that, like, I will always have a lot of respect for Romy for doing that. But I mean, I was producing the afternoon drive show with Jim Van Horn and Steve Brunt,
right.
And it's just, I mean, it was a phenomenal experience for me. I got to work with Don Chevrier. He was a fill-in co-host with us. And then, you know, just all the writers that we would have coming in and hosting with us or paneling with us. I think of people like Mary Ormsby, Steve Simmons, David Schultz, Scott Russell.
Wow.
Like we had some big names and we did some great work over that year and a half. But the fact that to this day, I still talk to Steve Brunt and still talk to Jim Van Horn. And in fact, it was kind of funny when I first started at AMI, Jim Van Horn does some work at AMI as well. And so it was kind of neat that we would find ourselves years later at AMI. And he would fill in for me on my show when I would when I'd be away. So it was like, talk about coming full circle.
Seriously.
And and just turning the tables a little bit. It was pretty cool. But a great experience. You know, real disappointment that I don't think it was given the opportunity that it needed to. I think that there were a lot of decisions that were made pretty hastily, and I really wish we could go back and just sort of hit the pause button on the decision to shut it all down.
Because it's always going to be hard to be second in, right? Like, if TSN 1050 has showed us anything, the fan had been the established champion for 20 years when they came in, 10 when you guys came in. You have to know you're going to get your ass kicked for a bit until you get people to kind of change their habits and learn what you got going on. And it seems like TSN was willing to ride that out until now. They're actually making a game of it and winning in certain time slots. it doesn't seem like Chum was willing to make that same investment and ride it out and give it a chance.
But TSN 1050 is locally driven, right?
Right.
So, like, we didn't do Leafs Lunch.
Right.
They do Leafs. Yeah. Like, they're a Toronto radio station.
Yep.
And that was what we were trying to do, something that had only been tried once before, and that was to create a national network.
Yeah. Okay.
The difficulty with that is, and there was a interesting article that I found in the archives a few weeks back, just sort of a retrospective on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And what I remember was that, you know, in a place like Ottawa, where things had been established and they'd been going now for a couple of years, and they had legs there, yeah. It was working there. Suddenly, you know, to have the folks in Toronto telling you, here's how things are going to run now, and taking over certain time slots.
Right.
I can understand that there was some resistance there. What disappoints me is everything that I've read and heard about as far as the sales aspect of things, and that it wasn't handled very well by the salespeople here in Toronto. That, you know, it had been easy to sell Chum for years just based on the reputation of 1050.
Yeah, been around forever.
You know, the rock and roll station.
Yep.
And there just didn't seem to be a willingness or there was a stubbornness when it came to understanding that selling sports was different, and that stubbornness is ultimately what caused a tremendous lost opportunity as far as revenue goes. And the fact was that, you know, the investors into that company wanted to see revenue.
Yeah,
they wanted to see some money coming in, and it wasn't happening. There was a lot going out, you know, in renovations and in rights fees and in salaries, but there wasn't a lot coming in. And I don't know if they really gave it a fair shake from the standpoint of putting their foot down and saying that they needed to see a change in the attitude of how sales were done. And that, to me, remains one of the big stumbling blocks that we had. And the other was just sort of really wrapping our own heads around at times being national.
Yeah.
And yet appealing to a local
radio audience. Is local, right? That's what it has.
Sure is.
Yeah. And if I'm in Vancouver, I don't want to split time hearing about this and this and this. I want to hear the Canucks. I want to hear the BC Lions.
Yeah.
And it's hard to go national like that.
Yeah. So, but hey, I mean, it was a great time.
Yeah.
It was a year and a half of my life.
Well, that, some great names you mentioned there.
Oh, I mean, you talk about the contacts that I made while I was there that I've maintained to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Some great, great friendships that I still have. People that, like, I can think of, like, our sports director at the time. I just talked to him yesterday.
Wow.
We've been friends for 20 years. and there are a lot of guys. It's such a small industry in this country,
mm-hmm.
that there are a couple of guys that I worked with there that I ended up working with at Sportsnet, and then I ended up working with at SiriusXM,
right?
And that some of them I found, you know, I ended up with at AMI. Like, it really is that small an industry in this country. So, I wouldn't. I'll never forget it. I'm
right.
Glad I did it. I the only regret I have is that I really don't think we got the fair shake that we should have got.
So you referenced SiriusXM there a second ago. I'd like to ask you a little bit about that, because I just finished saying and you know, that the radio is local. But one of the interesting things when satellite radio fired up was that it was anything but. And I bought satellite radio for the first time because I wanted the NHL radio, but also because I loved Opie and Anthony, who also mm-hmm. started out on XM. I thought that was a terrific show. I liked having it on while I was at work and whatever else. And it didn't matter that it wasn't local. It was, I really enjoyed it. But I wonder what you thought of working for as long as you did on an all-hockey station and what the challenges were of trying to stay up to date with 30 different teams and the storylines going on around it, as opposed to, you know, whatever market you might be in, you just have to follow their couple of teams, or even when you're trying to do national with the team, it's at least still a smaller, this is 30 teams. All people are wanting to hear about is their hockey, but you're going to hear about it from all over the league. What was that experience like?
So satellite radio, I mean, I'd never really heard much about it until I got a call saying, hey, and again, here was a former colleague of mine from a Chum and 1050, who is now leading the hockey channel, and said, I'd like to talk to you about some opportunities. And then starts to explain to me what satellite radio is. And I'm just like, wow, like I'm a radio guy. Yeah. I love radio. I love the history of radio. But this is blowing my mind here.
Right.
But I think you just said it. And it's not just for hockey, but for everything they do. Satellite radio is one of the only things I've ever encountered that tries to be everything to everyone and actually pulls it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because you can be in your car or now on your phone and say, you know what? Right now, I feel like listening to some country music.
Right.
And boom, there it is. And 10 minutes from now, man, I could really go for some stand-up comedy right now.
Sure.
Boom, there it is.
Just 80s or just 50s or
yeah,
all NASCAR.
Exactly.
Or...
And you talk about like Opie and Anthony. I mean, those guys, I love listening to those guys.
Yeah.
I got an opportunity to go down to their studios a couple of times, hang out during their show.
Oh,
that was
man.
A fantastic,
awesome.
Fantastic show. Yeah. And we actually did a cross show once. They came on our hockey show.
Really?
And we were like, we were on each other's show live. So we were on O&A, and
yeah.
They were on our channel. We did a cross broadcast, which was really cool.
That's so cool.
Opie was a big, big hockey fan.
Oh, yeah, he's Big Islanders guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically how I sort of came at it, was this is going to be a pretty unique opportunity in that we get to talk hockey, but we're going to talk about every single team. We're going to get tremendous access because of, you know, the $100 million that we'd paid to the NHL.
Yeah.
That buys you a little bit of access.
It sure does.
Not necessarily as much as you'd think, but it got us some.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because we came at it at a time when there was Sirius owned the NHL rights.
Right.
And again, we were separate companies. So you had Sirius, you had XM.
Right, when it started out,
companies.
For those unfamiliar, yeah, there's XM
yeah.
radio, and you had the NHL talk station, but you couldn't broadcast the games.
So we were called Home Ice.
Right.
And it was, we were allowed to broadcast the games. We had, we were a partner of the league.
Right.
But we could not say NHL yet.
Okay.
That came a couple of years later.
Okay.
But on my very first day, so I'm hired as the sort of the, if you're in the Eastern time zone, I was the midday
right.
and mid-afternoon producer and reporter. So I was doing all kinds of different things. But generally, I was producing a couple of different midday shows. And we would, the interesting thing about that is, okay, I'm producing from noon till 3 or noon to 4, but on the West Coast, that's a mid-morning show.
Right, yeah.
And it didn't take long to realize that we really were being listened to all over the place. And the big thing that we were going to do was help spread the word of hockey through the United States. And when you started getting phone calls from listeners in Texas
right.
and New Mexico and Idaho,
Paducah,
and
Kentucky.
Iowa,
yeah.
You're just going, wow. Like I never spent more than a nanosecond thinking about hockey fans, number one, outside of Canada.
Yep.
Number two, from a broadcasting standpoint, number two, if I was thinking about them in the U.S., they had to be in big markets, yep. right? Like yeah. major markets. But no, they were everywhere. And suddenly, you know, we're talking to people all across North America. So it didn't take me long to realize this was going to be a really good thing. And, you know, it ended up, for me, being the longest tenure I'd ever had anywhere. I was there for 10 years.
Right.
And they're still going strong,
yep.
right? They're going on, they're going on 15 years this year. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's really is remarkable.
Yeah.
But I think that the one thing that I could sort of chalk up to being a bit of a negative is that when you're covering 30, now 31, and soon to be 32 mm-hmm. teams, you lose the ability, I find, to be a fan of a team.
Right.
Because every night, and it's so in-depth. I mean, it really, you're doing hockey. When I was at XM, was a 7-day-a-week, 10-month-a-year, or 11-month-a-year right. thing. It really was. Like, I would go away in the summer for about five, like, I had about 5 weeks vacation every year. And I did sort of Bob McKenzie style. I would just, you know, I would wait till just after free agency opened,
mm-hmm.
and I would leave for 5 weeks. And I made sure that I was gone just long enough that my wife and I could go away for our anniversary in August. So every year I was gone for about a 5 or 6 week period.
Right.
But the rest of the year, all you're doing is hockey. That's all you do. You're watching it every night during the season. So
you can't even be a Rangers fan because maybe there's a big game between Pittsburgh and New Jersey I have to watch tonight to talk about tomorrow or whatever it might
and
be.
And what happens? What happens in sports radio now more than ever is that everybody, number one, every fan out there thinks they can do your radio
job. Yeah.
And every fan out there thinks they know more than you do. And there are a lot of fans out there who are out to prove that
yes.
or to try and prove that on a daily basis.
Especially in the social media age now and
exactly
the idiot and podcaster so, world.
So you get on the air and Joe Blow from Wichita, Kansas comes on and says, yeah, I was watching the Minnesota Wild Dallas Stars game last night and you know, I can't believe that so-and-so did this to so-and-so.
Yeah.
Well, you better know that happened.
Is. Yeah.
If you don't, you better be really good at BSing and skating because this guy paid his $10 a month or his $12 a month, and he's expecting you to know what you're talking about.
He wants to engage on this topic right now, and you better be able to do it.
So from 7 o'clock to 11:30 every night, it was wall-to-wall hockey. And then getting up at, 6 or 7 the next morning, you immediately go to NHL Network, and you're watching all the recaps.
Right.
And you're reading all the websites and checking all the local newspapers and just looking for any angle that you may not have picked up, you know, on TV the night before. But in doing so, you lose that ability to be a fan of a team because you don't have time to drill down on that one team.
Right.
You really don't. And it's not all bad. Like, I'm not saying that's a negative. It's part of being able to do your job well. And one of the great things that I took away from those 10 years were the friendships that I was able to make in so many NHL cities. Got a chance to go to a lot of those cities and made some really good friends in all of those cities, whether they were fans that became friends or team staff or players that became friends. So it's not like it's a negative thing. It's just that you walk away from that after 10 years the way I did. And, you know, the first thing that winter of 2015, 2016, it was amazing to me just to turn off hockey.
Right.
I didn't watch a hockey game till the Stanley Cup final
right.
in 2016. I did not watch a single hockey game.
Become a job instead of a passion, right?
Like, it's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And it's not a, listen, it's not a bad job.
Sure, no, of course
not. It's a great job.
Yeah.
But
like any job, you're ready for a vacation and
I wasn't a fan.
Right.
I wasn't a fan anymore.
Yeah.
And so I watched a whole bunch of baseball. I watched a lot of football. And that was that. And I didn't really get back into hockey until 2016. But that's just a testimonial to the work that it takes, the effort it takes to do that job that I did for 10 years. And when I look at guys like Bob McKenzie and Darren Dreger and the insiders, the guys, the lifers,
right?
Like they do it 10 times, 20 times more than I did and much deeper because they're really cultivating a lot of those relationships a lot deeper than I did. But it the level of engagement that it takes, I don't know if everybody really understands that and appreciates the effort that it takes to do that job and be good at it, let alone, just survive at it.
Right. Along the way, you know, you referenced a couple of times that, you know, obviously you did the 67s. I believe I read that you did some work with the Ottawa Lynx back in the day when you were doing announcing. Obviously, now we know you with the Leafs, and I want to get to that in a bit. But while you're doing the Sirius XM deal, if I have this correctly, you stepped in for stuntman Stu with the Senators announced team when he was going through some stuff. Is that correct?
That is correct. 2010.
2010 I've got here, yeah.
Yeah, so Stu had done some work at the Olympics in Vancouver. But part of the gig with the Olympics was if you took the Olympic announcing gig, you also had to go back and do the Paralympics as an announcer.
Oh, I like that.
And so with that, there was going to be a stretch of 3 games where Stu was going to be away.
Right.
And Glenn Gower was, he's a city councilor now in Ottawa.
Hmm.
At the time, Glenn was the game day entertainment or game presentation manager for the Senators. And Glenn was the guy who had hired me at the 67s.
Oh, wow.
Back in 98. So he called me up and said, hey, listen, I got this opportunity. I need an announcer for 3 games. And I thought I'd call you up and see, you know, are you able to do your show remotely and then do 3 games for us? And the guys at XM were absolutely more than happy to set me up. So I was able to broadcast my show from the road. And I did 3 games in that 2010-2011 season. I did a game against the Capitals, a game against the Calgary Flames, and against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, you gotta love those Leafs, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean that was my first opportunity to do NHL games, and we revisited that every year. For the Senators, I did a few, anywhere from 2 to 5 games a season for them, for the next 5 seasons.
Before you got that call in 2010, was still doing some in arena announcing like that something that had stayed on your mind, or was that sort of when you were called, it was like, oh yeah, I could still get back into that, or you know what was on your mind? Because obviously, it becomes a major part of your story again here moving forward after this.
Yeah. When I moved to Toronto, there, I mean, I was leaving the 67s. I'd been doing some fill-in stuff for the Lynx, but I had literally 2 weeks before I moved to Toronto been hired as the Lynx full-time announcer.
Okay,
they had the new owner. In Ray Pecor.
It's the AAA ball team for people not familiar with the Ottawa area.
Right. Yeah. And I had previously worked for the Lynx when they were part of the Expos organization.
Right.
And I'd worked in PR in the 1997 season. Best job I ever had in any job, because you know, I've certainly done a lot of hockey work, but baseball is my first love, my favorite sport.
Okay.
And so to be able to go to the ballpark every day, and you know, by 3 in the afternoon, being in the dugout watching batting practice, eating sunflower seeds and drinking Gatorade. And then the team goes out on the road and you get to call your buddies and say, come on down to the stadium. We're going to have BP today.
Wow.
That's just, honestly, worst paying job I ever had, based on the hours.
Sure.
It did not pay well.
Right.
But it was the best job I ever had. And I worked with some fantastic people. And again, the funny thing about working there was how that also, I talked about CKCU being a bit of a pipeline. Well, mm-hmm. The Ottawa Lynx PR department was a bit of a pipeline too, because PJ Loiello, who more recently was working with the Senators, left us in Ottawa to go work for the Expos, then went to Florida, worked with the Marlins, got himself a couple of World Series rings there.
Yeah, not a bad job there.
Morgan Quarry was the next PR guy. Morgan went on to become the general manager for Team Canada's men's soccer team.
Hmm.
Steve Keogh came in after that, and Steve went on to work for the Canadian Olympic Association.
Yeah, I know
UFC
that name.
Canada, and
that's
now Steve is
where it,
the... Yeah. And Steve is now the PR, the PR and communications manager or director with the Maple Leafs. So Steve and I see each other at Leaf games all the time.
Yeah.
And I was Steve's PR assistant in 1997.
Hmm.
And then Brian Morris worked with the Lynx in PR. He went to the Senators. Ian Mendez worked there. Ian left there and then went to the Senators in PR working with Steve, and then went to Sportsnet. So again, it's just another place where so many of the names in Canadian sports broadcasting and in media relations end up, you know, working, and it was a bit of a springboard.
Well, they always
for so many
who you know more than what you know, and these are places where you just keep making all kinds of contacts and networking. But
I also think that it was, they were great places to learn.
Sure.
And when I think about my time with the Lynx, and it was, you know, I would imagine similar for people who worked in with junior hockey or with the Rough Riders way back when. It was not just who you knew from within your organization, but a lot of the writers that you got to work mm-hmm. with and associate with. Like, I think when I was with the Lynx, you know, you'd get a call from Wayne Scanlon from the Ottawa Citizen, or you'd get a call from Barry Campbell at the Ottawa Sun, or Roy McGregor. Like, these guys, they're pillars of the Ottawa community and of sports writing, and you learn from them as much as you do learning from so many of your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
So they were great learning opportunities, great places for you to develop, you know, from a professional standpoint. And I think that's, you know, that's again, credit to the city of Ottawa and just the people that make up that city and that sports community on both sides of the field.
Sure.
That it was a great place to get your first opportunity, but also then to really develop your professional skills. So, but all that being said, I moved to Toronto and there are no opportunities down here. Every junior hockey team you can think of has an announcer. You know, there's no AAA baseball down here.
Right.
There's only one CFL team. So junior hockey was really the only option there. And it really wasn't an option because everybody had their guy.
Yep.
So I went through 9 years of not doing it before Glenn Gower calls me and says, hey, you want to do some Senators games? And I thought, okay, cool.
Did you miss it?
I did.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. And to be able to get my first crack at it back in my hometown.
Yeah.
With family in the stands, with you know, former colleagues and friends in the press box with me, Like that was just awesome. I think of guys, you know, like Dean Brown, Gord Wilson, guys I'd known at that time for, you know, 15 years and had been a colleague of and become friends with. Like it was just, it was awesome. And the other thing was just over my shoulder, I had my little cousin Alex Marchand, who is the DJ for the Senators and has been now for 14 seasons now.
Really?
Yeah. So I had him there. Like,
oh, so you should be able to get him on the show for us.
Oh, 100%. And the thing, his story is pretty cool too, because here's a guy who really wasn't a sports guy growing up, but in school, realizing that he wasn't an athlete, saw his buddies playing ball hockey at lunch in the gym and said, hey, you know what? I'm a pretty good techno guy.
Right.
I'm going to play some tunes for them. And then he starts doing it for his little brother's hockey game at Sandy Hill Arena in Ottawa.
It.
Well, that's the home of the Ottawa Gee-Gees.
Yep.
And the Gee-Gees hockey team, their manager catches him doing the tunes for his little brother's hockey games and says, hey, how'd you like to do it for us? And then I get him in with the 67s, and he does that for a few years. And then when Glenn Gower got hired at the Senators, then he brought Alex to the show.
Wow.
And he's been in the NHL ever since.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
funny how things break, eh? You make your own opportunities.
Absolutely. Well, that's just it. And that's what I ended up having to do. After, you know, the Senators gave me that opportunity to go and do a few games a year, which was great. I still, you know, I would get a taste of it, a little taste.
Yep.
But the real break for me in the Toronto area came when I heard that Toronto and Montreal were going to be co-hosting the World Junior Championship
right
in 2014-2015. Knowing full well that when a Canadian city hosted the tournament, they would always have a French language announcer and an English language announcer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, heck, I can do both. I'm fluent. So, you know,
got two shots at this.
Maybe I could kill two birds with one stone for them. So, I didn't know anybody with the Maple Leafs at that time. So I actually got on the horn to Hockey Canada out in Calgary and said, hi, here's who I am. Here are the two languages I speak. And I live in Toronto. I know you're going to be doing some games here. I was wondering if you're going to be holding any auditions for your PA job. And that was my in. I got the audition. I ended up winning the job. And since MLSE was co-presenting the games in Toronto with Hockey Canada, there were a bunch of folks working on the event from the Maple Leafs.
Right.
And that was my introduction to them. And so 2 years later, when the Leafs gig opens up, they're aware of who I am. And, you know, in the years between the World Juniors and the Leafs audition, I had gotten exposure in that first World Junior tournament that sort of snowballed into other opportunities. So right. I ended up doing a couple of Canadian men's World Cup soccer qualifying games.
Hmm.
I did the Pan Am Games. I did baseball, men and women's baseball for the Pan Am Games. And that just sort of, that kept me in the game a little bit.
Right.
But that initial move of calling Hockey Canada, essentially making my own break there,
yep.
Got my foot in the door with MLSE so that when the Leafs job opened up, they did think of me and called me up and offered me an audition.
So that 2015 World Juniors, that's the Connor McDavid year, the Max
yep.
Domi year, the Anthony
yep.
Duclair year. That's a hell of a team. I know you've been doing Leaf games, and it has a reputation for you know, being a little bit on the corporate side in the building. But that crowd in Toronto for that tournament was just wild. What was that experience like doing the World Juniors?
That was unlike anything I'd really ever done. because
how long did you spend beforehand learning some of those Czech and Slovak names and pronouncing?
Well, we got the rosters probably about about 4 or 5 days before the tournament, but there was no way of really verifying any of it, right? So, I mean, I was going with what I thought, but then every team brings a PR person with them. Yeah. And so before every game, I was huddling with them and taking notes and double and triple checking things with them. It was a tremendous challenge.
I bet.
But when I was, you know, I was in the end, I was really proud of, I got a lot of compliments from the various teams, which really meant a lot. And it's something that I've always really believed in that, you know, when you're announcing in stadium, it might be that player's only time.
Oh, especially at the World Juniors.
Only game.
For so many of those guys, that's the biggest thing they're ever going to do. Their parents are probably in the stands. It's a huge deal, right?
So you want to get it right.
Yeah.
You don't want to goof it up. And so I've always said that it's of the utmost importance to me to get the pronunciation of a guy's name right.
Yeah.
And the World Juniors in Canada, it's at a different level, right?
Sure.
Because it's a short tournament. The anticipation is there every year. The intensity is there every year.
Whole
and when it's held
watching.
Here,
yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's just massive. And so for me, it was tremendous. There was an energy for us as well, given the fact that it was the first time that it was held in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So even among the staff, the energy was really high. The anticipation was quite elevated. And then to win gold in that tournament was just a huge, huge plus.
I can't remember now. I know you started into the 16-17 Leaf season. There's a World Cup in Toronto. Did you call that?
I did not, actually. I auditioned for it.
Right.
And I'd won the Leafs gig in early August. And then subsequently got an email from the NHL saying, hey, would you be interested in auditioning for the World Cup? And mm-hmm. You know, if I'm not the Leafs guy, I'm not getting that email.
Sure.
I'm sure. But in the end, the fact that I was the Leaf guy cost me the job because they did not want any sort of Leaf thumbprints on that tournament. They wanted it, even though it was being held in our arena, they didn't want it to be a Leaf-centric event. Which I totally understood.
Sure. But to be fair, we don't know you yet as the Leaf guy. It would be different if it was Andy Frost or something.
That was my argument. That was my argument. But at the same time, my preseason with the Leafs that year, most of it, because of that World Cup, we were on the road. We were traveling. So I did my first Leafs game was in Halifax. Then we did a game in St. Catharines. When we did a game in Hamilton.
Down to Rico at one point, I think.
Yeah, we did one at Rico, and then we did our last one back home.
Right.
So I guess, big picture, I wouldn't have been able to do both anyway.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they went with the Vancouver Canucks announcer.
Yes, yeah.
And they went with Jay Richardson from Winnipeg as his backup.
Okay.
So it was, I mean, listen, if you're going to go, if you're going to say, okay, we don't want any Toronto influence on this, and you know, it's like, okay, I get it, not a problem, but if you're gonna go for somebody who's not the hometown guy and you're gonna go with anybody, you go with the Vancouver Canucks PA guy. And I say that because he is the official voice now of the NHL. Al Murdoch is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And Al is the voice of the NHL events.
Really?
So he does the Winter Classic. He does the All-Star Game.
Oh, wow.
So this is something that the NFL has done for years. They've had their official voice. So in that case, it's a guy by the name of Al Roach. Al Roach, familiar to hockey fans, maybe because he's the voice of the Colorado Avalanche. But he's also the voice of the, for many years, the Denver Broncos, but now the Minnesota Vikings. They fly him in to do their games. And he's the voice of the NFL. So he does the draft. He does the Hall of Fame game. He does the Canton, Ohio inductions. He does the games, the NFL games in Europe. They fly him over to Europe. He does the PA announcing there. So he does the Super Bowl, unless his team is in the Super Bowl, which has happened twice in his career. But otherwise, he's been, like, I think he's done something like 11 of the last 13 Super Bowls. So now the NHL has gone with that sort of regular voice for their events in Al Murdoch. And, I mean, just a pro's pro.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go with anybody, you made the right call going with Al Murdoch. But for me, I think it was a little disappointing in not getting to do that event. But at the same time, you know, I was just about to start on one hell of a road as the voice of the Maple Leafs. And so it didn't sting for very much, and it didn't sting for too long.
So you had mentioned when you left Ottawa the first time, it was to go to Toronto. It's kind of the media hub of this country. It's where radio guys want to get. If you're an in-arena, an in-field, whatever, announcer in this country, again, the Toronto Maple Leafs got to be the plum gig, right? Top of the pile. What does it feel like when you get the call that you're in, you're going to have that job?
Well, first of all, I had my parents visiting from out of town when I got the call, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Because when you move away, you don't get to live a lot of those special moments as they happen. Mm-hmm. It's always like a phone call or an email afterwards saying, hey, guess what? So we were out for lunch and I had my phone in my pocket. I took my phone out and realized, oh, I missed a call.
Right.
Check the voicemail. And it is the manager of game presentation for the Maple Leafs. And he's left me a message. Give me a call when you get a chance. Call him back. I get his voicemail. Now I'm starting to panic and leave a message saying, okay, I've got my phone out. It's like, you know, it's the ringer's on. I'm paying attention. I'm ready. So whenever you're ready to call me back, call me back. And so we sit down. We're having lunch. And again, my phone starts ringing. I don't notice it. My wife actually notices it and, like, basically, you know, grabs me wrestling style by the arm, like, hey, your phone's ringing. So I answer it, and it's Anton Wright, who is the manager of game presentation for the Maple Leafs. Excuse me. Really for all of MLSE, in fact. He's responsible for game presentation for the Leafs, the Marlies, the Raptors, TFC, the Argos, and Raptors 905. So big job that he's got. And I was just like, okay, hi, how's it going? And he was so nonchalant, too. He was like, hey, how's your weekend going? And I'm like, good. He said, listen, I just wanted to touch base with you about the Leafs PA gig, see if you're still interested. And I sort of paused and I thought, is this guy kidding me? Like, really? Am I still interested? Like, okay, I can answer this in one of two ways. I can be a real smartass and be sarcastic and snarky, which I didn't do. I just said, well, yeah, of course I am. Absolutely. And he said, okay, good. He said, I just wanted to just check in with you and ask you, tell you that we would like you to be the next PA announcer for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Wow.
At which point my knees sort of buckle underneath me. I can see my family from across the room because I'd left the table to take the call. And I'm just sort of giving them a big fist pump. And, you know, it really was, to this day, is a bit of a blur as far as, you know, what we talked about. But what I will never forget is how the call ended, which was with Anton, you know, saying, listen, if you have any questions. Otherwise, you know, we'll talk again on Monday and we'll set some stuff up. And I said, no questions. I'm good. I'll talk to you on Monday. And he paused and said, all right, welcome to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Ooh.
And, you know, again, I'm just in saying that now, I still get shivers, get goosebumps from it. It was an unbelievable moment. And, you know, we made a beeline for the closest sporting goods store, and I bought a cap, a brand new Leafs hat. And, you know, I'd been told.
As an Ottawa kid, did you ever think you'd be doing that?
Well, I mean, I grew up a Maple Leafs fan.
Okay,
so,
wow.
So for me, it was, I was coming home.
Yeah, perfect.
And, you know, I still had.
Because I get nasty looks wearing my Leafs hat around town here. I got to tell you.
Believe me, I mean, I get those. And I get those from family.
Right.
You know, I mean, my mom's an Ottawa Senators fan. My sister's a Sens fan. I mentioned my cousin Alex.
Yeah. He's obviously got an interest.
Obviously,
yeah.
Right? And and I wasn't allowed to say anything. For several weeks, like they want to keep everything under wraps for several weeks. So I never said anything formally. I just wore the hat and I hadn't, you know, I'd been wearing so many different NHL hats and jerseys and t-shirts over the years, that, only those really, really close to me sort of caught on.
Sure.
And understood what I was sort of subliminally saying to them. But what was really great and just sort of come full circle, on, you know, the whole NHL radio experience was I could be a fan again.
Right.
And I could be a fan of the team that I cheered for growing up. Right. I could be a fan of the team. The very first NHL jersey I ever bought, was a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey with number 10 on the back and it was number 10 for Vincent Danfous.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I was a Dan Daou fan. you know, Saturday nights, I mean, I grew up next door to my grandparents' house,
mm-hmm.
My mom's parents. And, you know, my parents weren't big sports fans. My grandfather was a huge sports fan and gave me my love of sports. And we would play hockey and baseball together. We would watch it together. And Saturday nights were about hockey night in Canada,
yeah.
Watching the Toronto Maple Leafs together. And so, you know, so when I wrap up that call and think, you know, welcome to the Toronto Maple Leafs, I mean, I immediately start thinking about my grandpa, who wasn't with us anymore, but who I know, you know, would have been thrilled about it. And just so many memories of growing up, you know, as a Maple Leafs fan, start sort of flooding back and just trying to wrap my head around the fact that there, at that point, up until me, there'd only been three other PA announcers in the history of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And now I was number four, and that, you know, a couple of days later, my dad, who again, didn't really follow sports, had done a little reading and called me up and said, you realize you're only the fourth announcer in the history of the team? You know, when he gets it,
yeah,
when he understands it, you know, you really sort
it's
of
original six iconic,
you understand,
yeah,
you get it, yeah. And so, yeah, it was a summer I'll never forget because it was the most nerve-wracking summer of my life. It was about a month and a half between the audition and getting that phone call that also involved a face-to-face interview in a corner office with Brendan Shanahan. And then the eight longest days of waiting in my life until I got that phone call. But
well, and for people
what a thrill.
Who haven't put two and two together yet, this is the 16-17 season. This is a season of change. This is the first year for Marner and Nylander and Matthews and Freddie Anderson. And we're turning a corner from some bleak times. And at the same time, we're getting a new in-house voice. We're kind of getting a change of presentation. man, what a, I can tell as a fan, like what a fun season to see those kids drop in. And everyone knows we're now on the right track, but I don't know if anyone really expected they'd make the playoffs, but they end up getting in, fighting tooth and nail against Washington. 5 out of 6 games go to overtime. Like, what an incredible time to get that opportunity and not be calling the Nicholas Hagman Leafs or the Brad Boys Leafs or whatever it might be, where there's very few goals that need calling for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of people will like to, or the Leaf haters like to poo-poo this, but I still contend that, you know, we made the playoffs this year. This year was such an anomaly,
right,
that we made the playoffs. So stick that in your pipe. and I'd like to say it's no coincidence that we've made the playoffs every season that I've been with the club.
Got to be the good luck charm.
Maybe. Now, maybe it has something to do with Marner or Matthews or Nylander. I don't know. Maybe. But you're right. It was a time where the reset button was hit on game presentation. So we had two new hosts in arena in Scott Willits and Danielle Emanuel. We had a full-time anthem singer in Martina Ortiz Luis.
She's fantastic too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, at the time she's 15 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just mind blowing. and you got me, it's the 100th season. So by the way, welcome to the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're our new announcer. And, oh, yeah, by the way, on opening night, we're going to have a ceremony where we retire a whole slew of numbers.
Yeah.
It's going to be about a 30-minute script for you. You're going to be talking for 30 straight minutes. Probably one of the biggest moments in the history of the franchise,
yeah,
because we're also going to be retiring a new number, and that's Dave Keon, and announcing our top 100 players of all time. No pressure. Good luck. See ya.
Welcome to the
welcome to the NHL.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're right, that whole season, just certainly the excitement of the youth of the team.
Yeah.
But, and of course, making the playoffs.
Yeah.
But it was that opening night with all those jerseys going to the rafters. It was the Centennial Classic and doing an outdoor game.
I was at that game. That was awesome.
I mean, it was an unbelievable time.
Yeah.
So a ton of firsts for me, but also some tremendous, tremendous memories in that first year for the Maple Leafs, and was also, this a starting point for, as I mentioned, Danielle and Scott and Martina. And, you know, our game presentation manager, Taylor Dean, that was her first season in that chair. Mm. So there are a whole bunch of firsts that year. And you're right. I mean, it really was sort of a reset for game presentation, but you could argue that there was a bit of a reset on the ice as well.
Yeah, for the entire franchise there. So the Leafs do turn things around, a couple straight playoff appearances. Don't go as far as any of us want them to, but you could certainly say that they are on the right track. This year you referenced this odd playoff structure. The Leafs had something like an 87% chance of making it when they shut it down. You're right,
yeah,
they were getting in. But talk to me about this bubble where how do you start to hear this is what's going to go on? You're going to be, there's not going to be any fans, but we still need you to come and do this. What is that experience? How does it get presented to you, and what does it look like once it happens?
So probably 2 to 3 weeks before everything is about to start, I get a call from Taylor Dean, our game presentation manager, who's going to be working with the NHL on the event in Toronto, and told, "Hey, listen, there's we're likely going to be a bubble city. And we're trying to replicate as much of the in-game experience, in arena experience, that the players depend on and the sounds that the players count on." Mm-hmm. So we want the music, we want the announcer, we want the goal announcements, we want the last minute of play, et cetera, et cetera. It's things that, these players are creatures of habit.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to hear these things. So you know, basically we were told that they were going to bring in two of us, and ended up being Simon Bennett from the Marlies was the other announcer with me. Mm-hmm. And we basically ended up splitting the games right down the middle. The only caveats were that I was doing every Maple Leaf game.
Right.
And I had to do every Montreal home game because those games had to be done bilingually.
Okay.
And Simon doesn't speak French. Right. So just as I think, I can't confirm this. I just know it's true. That I think Simon may have been one of the guys who went out for the World Junior gig.
Okay.
When I got it.
Right.
And so it was just another time where I beat him out because I spoke French. So sorry, Simon, but you know, you had 5 years to learn French and you didn't do it. So too bad. But it was a great opportunity for the two of us. And I was so happy for him to get the opportunity to do NHL games.
Right.
Like that, I know what that excitement's like.
Sure.
And you know, we would talk a little bit here and there throughout the tournament. And like I could just read the excitement on his face. Like
yeah.
it was awesome. But that was it. The message was we want to replicate it. The other hurdle, if you will, from an announcing standpoint was that you had to sort of replicate the home enthusiasm. So suddenly you're the home announcer for the Boston Bruins,
Carolina.
And you're the home announcer for Carolina.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Yeah. I got to be enthusiastic about Pasternak, Bergeron, Marchand?
Right.
No thanks. But okay. Yes, please.
Sure, of course.
So so that took a little bit of sort of wrapping my head around.
When even got me sitting there each day going, who's at home again? Right? Like, oh, okay, it's Boston today, right? Like,
yeah, that was fun, actually, because it was, you know, ramping up the enthusiasm for it, but also from the game presentation standpoint, you know, the a lot of the elements within the game that were played were based on who the home team was, right?
Sure, different sound effects.
So who's
songs,
the anthem?
Or,
who's the anthem that we're running today?
Yeah.
You know, what goal song are we playing at this point and at that point? What's the win song for this team and that team? So there was a lot. There was a lot that went into producing these games, and like full credit to the folks who were doing that, because I did 31 games in 19 days. But there were people who did the full 61 games. I don't remember the total number of days that they would have done those games in.
Right.
But they did 61 games. And then you got the folks who left Toronto and went to Edmonton and finished the rest of the tournament there, right?
Yeah.
So the folks in Edmonton, they ended up, like the announcer in Edmonton, he ended up doing something like 63 games in total. Where I did the 31.
Right. So are you being tested every day before you come in? Like, what does that experience look like?
So you walk in, you get the temperature check, you get the symptom check, and you get the nasal swab every day before every shift. And thankfully, it wasn't the brain buster one. It was just the swirl in both nostrils for 15 or 20 seconds.
Right.
So, yeah, the testing, that was a must, and they kept really good track of that.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, they set it up in a way that you had to walk past the testing area to go to your shift.
Okay.
And then once you were in, so like I wasn't quote unquote in the bubble.
Right.
I was on the periphery.
With
so
the
what
media
they had done is
upstairs and
So there were zones in the building. And so we were assigned to our zone, which was our announcing booth.
Right.
And the little part of the press box in front of our announcing booth. That was it.
Okay.
That's the only places that we were allowed to go. And we could go, we had to go down to the fourth floor. We're up on the sixth floor.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go down to the fourth floor to use the bathrooms. and that was it. Those were the two places that for those 20 days, the only places you were allowed to go.
Wow.
So they did a really good job at keeping people in their zones, and full credit to the people who were working there for staying in their zones.
Yeah, of course.
And respecting the boundaries and making it a test, or rather a positive test-free zone, We didn't get a single positive test the whole time.
It was incredible the job they did.
It's pretty remarkable.
Did it throw you at all? Like, there's no crowd. I know there was some fake sounds in there, but there's no crowd feedback that kind of builds your own enthusiasm. Yeah.
It did the first game. The first game when they said, you know, welcome, you know, whatever this team or that team, and I did it, and it kind of went.
Crickets.
Like, who am I? Suddenly you do it and you say, please welcome to the ice the New York Islanders.
Right.
And you go, who did I do that for? Like, what? You're so used to being sort of like, I always used to say when I was with the 67s, our booth was like just hanging over the crowd.
Right.
And part of my job, we didn't have in-house hosts back then, so it was up to the announcer to pump up the crowd.
Okay.
And I used to say I was a puppet master because I could get 10,500 people out of their seat cheering for the 67s by, you know, just pushing a couple of buttons and prompting them a little bit.
Right.
So when you're used to that being your gig and all of a sudden they're not there anymore and you're still yelling and being, you know, super enthusiastic and pumping up nobody.
Yeah.
It was like, okay. So yeah, I would say a big chunk of that first game, I had to sort of wrap my head around it. But then,
well, like, you're going to keep your own energy up, right? Like, to stay enthusiastic when there's no one around you being enthusiastic. It's hard.
It was until I started really feeding off the enthusiasm of the players in game.
Okay.
And you could hear the players so well, right?
Right.
So you could hear them cheering from the bench. You could hear them yelling on a big hit or a big save.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, I was feeding off of that.
Right.
And so, yeah, that initial feeling of, you know, who am I doing this for, went away really quickly once I started feeding off the energy of the players. And also, you know, putting through my head that there's also a TV audience.
Yep.
Like, I started getting texts from people and say, hey, I'm hearing you on TV. That's really cool. And a lot of family and friends that, you know, were fans of other teams.
Sure.
Now I was doing their team's game and they thought that was really cool. And sort of feeding off that energy a little bit as well. So that initial feeling of sort of unease and awkwardness went away really quickly.
Really cool insight there, and to see how that was going behind the scenes. I got one more for you, because I don't know how many people, especially outside of the Maple Leaf fan base, were aware of this, but back in the spring when everyone was kind of stuck at home and down and trying to figure this thing out, you were doing something really cool, and you would put it out on your Twitter or your Instagram, I can't remember now, on social media, that if people sent in the details, you would create goal calls in the style of obviously a Maple Leafs goal for kids or whoever was home from school or what might be going on with that. I wonder, I thought that was a really cool idea. I wonder where the idea comes from and just kind of a general sense of maybe how many of those you ended up having to do.
Well, I mentioned Al Murdoch from the Canucks. He was the first guy that I saw doing it. And not long after, maybe just a matter of days after seeing Al do one, like, and at the time he was doing just Canuck calls. He wasn't doing them for fans per se.
Okay.
He was just doing it for the fans.
Right.
Like, it wasn't a personalized thing.
Sure.
But he picked up on it that fans are going to be missing their hockey. So I want to give them a little taste of Canucks hockey and
right.
would throw out these random goal calls. Meantime, I noticed on social media that there was a young Leafs fan whose parents put out a tweet that the kid was having his birthday. None of his friends could go because of COVID, right?
Right.
And we were so fresh into lockdown.
Yeah.
And everybody just sort of, you know, I think freaking out. Like we were all sort of trying to wrap our heads around being in our house and not being able to go to work and not being able to go, you know, to games and to sports and to shopping. And it was just such a strange time.
Yeah.
And when I saw that tweet, I did a goal call for that kid. And then I just got a couple of requests from people. And I thought, you know, maybe there's something here. maybe it's something I can do. So I put a video up and said, if you want your name called out, or you want your kid's name called out, send me the information. I did it on Twitter. I did it on Instagram. And people just started sending me, you know, their goal requests, whether it was their kids on the goals and assists. Sometimes it was, you know, somebody would say, oh, here's my grandfather on the goal, my dad and I on the assists. You know, it was remarkable. And it just absolutely blew up way more than I ever would have expected, clearly. But it started picking up in all the markets. And we had a Zoom call of a bunch of the NHLPA guys at one point. And, you know, I mean, I thanked Al for getting the ball rolling and really sort of inspiring the whole thing. And then other guys started talking about their experience. And, you know, I'm not going to name the markets, but, you know, hey, I did, 20 of those. And,
right.
I did 50 and I did 100.
Sure.
You know, and we teamed up with Cameo and we did 200 of those and raised some money for charity. And
sure.
And they said, how many have you done? I said, 1,200. And they said, what? I said, yeah, over 1,200 now and counting, because they're still coming in.
Center of the hockey universe.
You know, if that's not the proof you need... I don't know what is. I know Vancouver got a lot. I know Montreal, Michelle Lacroix in Montreal got a lot.
Right.
But there's no way they got as many as I did. And I was just absolutely thrilled to do every single one of them. It required a ton of patience from the fans, because, you know, there were a couple of people over the course of the months that I did this that, you know, would send me a note and saying, hey dude, like, you got my goal call yet?
Ah, come on.
And I know that they're coming at it from a good place.
Yep.
Right? They're just excited. They want their goal call. But when I then would explain to them, you know, that I was basically churning out 25 to 50 of these a day, depending on the day, at the same time still doing my morning shows for AMI.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got to take care of my voice, man.
Of course.
You know, I do voice acting on the side too. And so like, I'm working through all of this.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm more than happy to do this for you, but I need you to just cut me a little bit of slack,
yeah.
Right? Just a little. But again, like I know where they were coming from.
Of course.
And they're the best fans in hockey, and I was, you know, more than happy to do it for them. The great thing is, in order to make sure that I got them all as they were coming in, I was transcribing them into a notebook, and it filled up almost three notebooks. And for me, like I'm looking at them right now from across the room. That for me is going to be one of the great mementos of 2020 for me. Not only because of my association with the Maple Leafs and what a great way for me to have been able to connect with fans,
mm-hmm.
But just what a crazy crap year it's been in so many ways. But I've got this great, great memory and a great physical memento.
Well, and 1,200 great memories you created for other people.
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
Yeah. And honestly, it was more than I expected it to be.
I bet.
You know, and when they first started flooding in, it was kind of like, whoa, this is taking off. This is cool.
Yeah.
And when, you know, a month in, they were still coming. And I mean, I did a couple just like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Like they're still coming. And I have no problem with it.
Right.
But I also know that the generosity of our fans was a big thing that came out of this, because as we were going, people started asking me, hey, is there a charity I can make a donation
right.
to
yeah.
in exchange for this? And I said, you know, the big thing for me was I wasn't charging anybody for anything, because, you know, I just imagined that as lucky as I was to be working through the pandemic, there were a lot of people that weren't.
Yep.
And the last thing I'm going to do is say, yeah, I'd be happy to inject a little hockey happiness in your life, but here's what's it going to cost you.
Yeah.
And I know that there are guys in other markets, especially in the U.S., where they immediately teamed up with something like Cameo, where you had to pay.
Sure.
I wasn't comfortable doing that. And yet, when people started asking me, I said, well, listen, you can give to whatever charity you want to give. I'm really glad for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, if you're asking me personally, I said, I'm always an advocate for MLSE's Launchpad.
Yep.
A great charity for kids, sports camps, sports activities, but really teaching them a lot of life lessons through sports. And they've done so much great work that the MLSE Foundation is obviously near and dear.
Yep.
And suddenly, like, it just took off. And I get a call, or an email rather, from the foundation saying, not sure what you're doing over there, but our donation numbers have... like we've seen a real abnormal spike for this time of year. And so we sort of jumped online and saw what you're doing, and clearly people are responding. And
that's awesome.
It really was. And the generosity of our fans, you know, the foundation turned around and said, we want to keep this going. So they donated a signed Tavares jersey.
Oh, wow.
And so then I put out the message again, anybody who's gotten a goal call and made a donation, or you know what, in fact, no, let's throw that out the window. Anybody who's gotten a goal call, anybody who wants to enter, put up a tweet, mention the goal call initiative in a hashtag, and we're putting your name in for the draw. And we gave away that jersey, and in turn, raised a whole bunch of money for a wonderful kids charity, and hey, kept my pipes warm for when I went into the bubble. Like, there was no training camp needed for me. I was ready to go. So it was all good.
I think that's a truly incredible thing that you did, and to see the, first of all, I don't think, obviously, I didn't see it getting as big as it did, but when you first posted that tweet, and within an hour, I could see the number of replies it was getting. I was like, oh man, Mike's in for a ride here.
Like, well, I'm glad you figured it out. You could have told me.
It was coming fast. You could tell that. Truly an awesome thing that you did, and like you said, to see that you offered to do it free of charge, and people went out of their way anyway to make a donation. Just an awesome initiative. Really cool to see.
And the reaction... And the response I got after, though, is what really made it for me. The charitable side of it is one thing, but people were sending me videos of their kids listening to the calls.
Right.
Like one guy had me do it where it was his son scoring and his two daughters getting the assists. Well, he put it on a speaker and shot a video. They were out playing hockey in the driveway, and so he shot a video of him playing that for them. So he interrupts their game, plays the goal call for them. So I mean, great moment. But the kids who were sitting on the couch and then jumping up and down at the fact that, you know, they're the goal scorer with Austin and Mitch is the assists.
Yeah. The voice, the Leafs giving it to you. That's amazing.
And yeah. And then just like looking right in the camera and saying, thank you, Mr. Ross. Like that just melted me.
Yeah.
And you know, there's only one other, One other moment that I think is sort of stuck with me from an emotional standpoint of being affiliated with the Leafs and doing this job. And it sort of comes back to what we talk about Leafs Nation and what the Maple Leafs mean to their fans and how no matter what you do with the Maple Leafs, it's amplified because it's the Maple Leafs. So you may be an usher at Leafs games, but in the eyes of the fans of the Leafs, like you're like a super usher. You may be the anthem singer, but you are the best anthem singer.
If you're doing it in Toronto, the world's watching. You are the
everything.
Best.
Everything. It really is. You know, the old slogan at MLSC was bringing the world to its feet. and that's what the Maple Leafs do. And, you know, they'll often ask hockey players, what was your, you know, welcome to the NHL moment or the moment you sort of realized that you were in the NHL? And some of the guys will say it's when they took a face off against one of their heroes, you know, one of the guys that they watched for years. Yeah. And for me, there've been a couple, and I'm talking outside of a game. The first time I saw my name in a book on the history of the Maple Leafs, very cool. But the key moment for me was in my first season, about halfway through the season. And you have to understand that people don't like change.
Right.
A lot of people don't like change.
Well, you've been hearing Andy Frost for 16, 17 years, and now there's a new guy, and it takes some getting used to, I guess, right? For some people.
It really did.
Yeah.
And we talked about social media, right?
Yeah.
It was, if I didn't have the 10 years experience I had in satellite radio and being very, very active on social media and having the thick skin that I had, I could have very, very easily found myself lying on the floor in the fetal position in severe anguish because right. I took a lot of hits from people who, for whatever reason, whether they legitimately didn't like what I was doing, how I was doing it, or just didn't like change.
Right.
It was a rough go. And so about 4 or 5 months in, before every game, we give tours of there are tours given to season ticket holders or people who buy the Leaf Day experience and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a dad who comes through there with his little guy, and part of the tour is they come up to the organ loft and to the announcer booth.
All right.
And so he had his little guy. He's probably about, I don't know, 4, maybe 5 years old. And so we give them the tour. I sit the little guy in my chair, swing him around, set up the microphone, everything, gives like a really cool, unique sort of photo op.
Yeah.
And then bring him back to his dad, and they're walking out, and the dad says, you know, thank you very much, above and beyond, that was really great, thank you. And as he went through the door, he stopped, turned around and came back, and he said, by the way, just want you to know, when he's out playing hockey in the driveway, he does you.
You're that voice now.
And I thought, he does me. What are you talking about? Yeah. And he said, well, when he scores goals, he announces them like you. He does his Mike Ross impression. And you talk about goosebumps. That, to me, was my welcome to the NHL moment as far as connecting with the fans.
Right.
And suddenly, you know, for me, I start going back to when I was a kid, when I was a fan growing up, Saturday nights with my grandfather. Paul Morris is the voice that you hear at the Gardens. And, you know, a friend of mine had told me very early on in this gig that, you know, for a whole generation of Leaf fans, you're going to be that voice.
Yep.
And at the time, you know, sure, I acknowledge it, but it never really rang true to me, or I guess I didn't fully comprehend it until that guy told me about his kid.
Yeah, here it is right in front of me telling me the story. Yeah. It's real now.
And I mean, that sort of drove home the message to me about just what it means to work for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And though I don't strap on the blades, I don't get out on the ice, I'm a member of a great team. And that's why the Goal Call Initiative was really important to me, because the fans are everything for us as an organization.
Right.
And we can never, nor will we ever, lose sight of that. It really is about the fans. And I think that's what made the bubble experience difficult at times, was being there, announcing the games, sharing, you know, things on social media about it, knowing though that our fans couldn't be a part of it. And sort of a little bit heartbroken for them.
Yeah.
And really looking forward to the time when we can have them back in the building and we can get it going again.
Well, and we're all looking forward to the time where we'll be hearing you call out, you know, another John Tavares or Austin Matthews goal, something like that. And hopefully it's not too far down the road. Like I said, I think that initiative that you started and that you put forward, and I could see it on social media blowing up. I mean, it was incredible to see. I think it's amazing that you were willing to go and do that for so many Leaf fans. So kudos to you for doing it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mike, this has been terrific. I've kept you for much longer than I probably should have, but I find your career and all of this stuff fascinating. So thank you so much for making so much time. And like I said, we will get you in here once the pandemic's over. We'll do this in person. We'll pay off that pint that we owe you, and maybe get you to tell a few more stories. But this has been terrific. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, it's my absolute pleasure, and I will be taking you up on on that drink and another appearance. I would I'd love to do it. There's nothing better than talking sports, talking hockey,
yeah.
and doing it with somebody from my hometown is always a little extra special.
Perfect. We are on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this one. For Mike Ross, my name's Matt Robinson, and we will see you all on the next one.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.